Yo, what is going on, my fellow wrestling fans? Welcome to a brand new week, and welcome to a brand new edition of what we like to call the Clash of the Champions, where we talk about the different personalities, controversies, storylines, and everything in between that center around this world we know and love as professional wrestling. I am your host, the vegan you believe in, Conscious Kurt, a.k.a. the professor in the flesh as always, and my co-host needs no introduction, but the hell with it. He's going to give y'all one anyway.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. This is his tag team partner, Jonathan Randall, at your guys' service. And welcome to our wrestling podcast, our soap opera that we love to talk about. And today is election day in our country. So by the time you hear this episode, we'll pretty much have a new elected president for our country. But this episode is mainly for our recap episode because we are recapping from a momental Crown Jewel event from Saudi Arabia this past Saturday.
Yes, we had Crown Jewel taking place from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And I have to say, from top to bottom, it was a decent show. Not a great show. Not a show I would go back and watch multiple times. But it was good for what it was.
I think when I look back at the show, there was a couple of interesting things that happened that, okay, this is something good to look back. But stuff that, you know, we should be looking forward to, because I said this last week that there's certain things that are going to happen in this event that's going to lead into Survivor Series, and I was pretty much right.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we're going to get started off with that discussion by talking about the opening match, as we had Roman Reigns, Jimmy, and Jey Uso all reunited like one big happy family bullshit against the Dollar Tree bloodline of Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, and Jacob Fatu. My tribal chief, I love you. I love you. I love you.
It was a pretty decent match. It was a good way to start the match, especially what happened towards the end. Decent match, but I think really things really started to speed up, really get under fire pretty much towards the end of that match, because surprisingly, all hell breaks loose, and then out of nowhere, Sami Zayn shows up.
Well, before all that happened, there were certain points in the match where Jey Uso refused to tag in Roman, which was kind of strange. Yeah, you could definitely tell that he hasn't fully forgiven him, which is understandable. Mm. But eventually, Jey did tag Roman. Roman got the hot tag, cleaned house. But at one point, he was laid out by Jacob Fatu and hit with that springboard moonsault. And that would allow Solo Sikoa to hit Roman Reigns with two consecutive Samoan spikes. And Solo Sikoa pinned Roman Reigns to win the match.
You know what? That is surprising. You think of all right. I mean, we knew we picked, you know, the Dollar Tree bloodline to win the match, though. But I did not expect Roman Reigns to get pinned. We thought maybe Jey or Jimmy Uso would have got pinned. But the fact of seeing Roman Reigns get pinned, of all people, that was surprising.
Yeah, it was very surprising, and it's crazy. That's the second straight year where Solo Sikoa won at Crown Jewel. Last year, pinning John Cena, and this year, pinning Roman Reigns.
Crazy.
Damn. He needed that, though, because after he lost at SummerSlam, and then he lost the rematch against Cody, and then he lost the tag match at Bad Blood last month, yeah, he needed a big win.
And like I said, they needed this win too, because they needed that momentum and heat going into Survivor Series, because we both know and everybody knows that this whole thing's not over yet.
Hell no.
They needed this win. They needed this momentum, as I predicted. So I was right. So, but like I said, Roman getting pinned, we didn't see that coming.
No, not at all. I figured that they were going to win, but I figured maybe Jey or Jimmy would have gotten pinned. But damn, Roman Reigns got pinned by Solo Sikoa. And now, from what Rikishi was saying last week, he's going to be talking about that even more, about how Solo Sikoa needs to be the champion. You need to pull a trigger and put the championship on him. He's the hottest heel in the company. And I'm going to bucket some of that a little bit. Although Solo's work has been good, I don't think he needs to be the champion, at least right now.
Not yet. Maybe next year, see how that plays out, but not now. But look, I love what they're doing with him right now. Let's just be happy for what's going on with him right now.
And in the post-match, it looked like the bloodline was going to continue their attack on the Roman and the Usos. But then Sami Zayn came out to a huge pop, as he has roots in Saudi Arabia. You've seen him at the past Saudi shows. He's come out. He acted like he was going to hug Solo Sikoa, but as he was about to do that, he hit him with a suplex.
Yeah. That, and it looked like he... And it looked like, man, Sammy's going to join them, though. But nope, just in a blink of an eye, he, you know, turns on Solo. So,
and then they cleared all the other members of the Bloodline out of the ring. And then all four of them, Roman, Jimmy, and Jay, and Sammy, had Solo surrounded from all four corners of the ring. And Roman and Sammy both attempted to hit a Superman punch and a kick at the same time. But as they both attempted to do that, they both missed. And then Sammy kicked Roman by mistake.
Yeah. Leaves a lot of question marks, and that was one of the things I was talking about. Those moments that going into Survivor Series. Accident, we know it was an accident, but man, what's going to happen moving forward? That's a big question.
And one person who was not happy about the way this went down was Jimmy Uso, and he got in Sami Zayn's face, was bitching at him, yelling at him. He even pushed him at one point, and Jay Uso had to calm him down. And yeah, it's looking like they're going to be teasing more dissension between Sammy for the next few weeks until he eventually decides to join them. But yeah, I liked how the match ended. Was very surprised by the finish. But yo, thumbs up to this whole match and also the way it played out afterwards.
Oh yeah, I agree. Got to have a cliffhanger ending. You know what I mean? So we love that.
Always. Okay, so in our next match for the women's tag team titles, we had a fatal four-way between Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill defending the titles against Chelsea Green and Piper Niven, Jakara Jackson and Lash Legend, and Io Sky and Kairi Sane. And I also noticed that they edited out the Chelsea Green from Samantha Irvin's announcement from Chelsea Green's entrance music.
Really?
Yeah, if you listen to her entrance music when she came out, they edited out the Samantha Irvin version of how she says Chelsea Green.
Oh, okay.
Damn. They're really trying to erase her big time.
Man, there's no way to do that. Oh, man.
It is what it is. The match was good. Personally, I think the four-way between each member of a team that they had the night before on SmackDown was better. But this match was still solid. Yo, that Lash Legend woman is very impressive, as I said before.
Oh, yeah.
The bougie bully, they call her.
Her gimmick really stands out, you know what I mean? So her character really stands out. I love the spot what Chelsea Green did outside the ring. I thought it was funny.
Which spot?
Where she was trying to attempt to jump out of the ring, do a splash.
Oh, yeah, that spot. And then there was this one spot where Piper Niven didn't know that Chelsea Green was down on the ground, and then she accidentally hit her with the Vader bomb. Oh, man.
Wow.
I'm telling you, man, Chelsea Green's becoming one of my favorite characters on the female side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, her character work, that's what I mean. Like, just as a character, she is fucking dope.
Yeah, nailing it.
Yeah, and this mistake would ultimately lead to Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill hitting Piper Niven with actually a doomsday device, Shades of the Road Warriors, and they would retain their titles.
As we pick, as we, you know, solid match though, but hey, you do, you know, you just have the tag titles on them. There's no need to take it off. So, as we predicted, they retain their titles.
Yes, they did. And we'll see what goes on with them in the months ahead. I think I know who the next challenges are going to be from what happened on Raw last night, but we will get into that later. In our next match, we had Seth freaking Rollins going one-on-one with Big Bronson Reed.
Let's do a fit check real quick and check out Bronson Reed's outfit attire that night.
Oh, yes. I noticed that it was a tribute to MF Doom.
Yeah, liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too. So we had the match. The match was pretty good for the most part. They fought outside the ring here and there. And yeah, they had a nice little brawl. But ultimately, despite the punishment that Bronson Reed put Rollins through, Rollins hit Bronson Reed with multiple curb stomps. One on the steps, one in the ring, and one from the second rope in the ring to finally finish off Bronson Reed for the win. But despite the fact that he hit him with so many curb stomps and Rollins won, Bronson Reed still got right back up, signaling that this feud is not over.
Two things. Was Bronson Reed bleeding that match?
Yes, he was bleeding from his stomp. Yes, he was bleeding from his eye.
From like his upper eyebrow. Okay. Number two, it looked like Bronson Reed had that match won because he did that tsunami splash from the top rope and looked like he had it won, but he was going to do it again, but then he missed it, which ended up leading to Rollins picking up the victory after the curb stomp. My other thing is that a lot of people were saying Seth Rollins winning this match, was that the right move?
Probably not, but at least they made Bronson Reed look strong, especially when he got back up.
It did.
And so that shows that this is still going to continue.
True. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, even though they did that, I wasn't expecting that. I wanted Bronson Reed to win that match, though. But yeah, him getting up right after the match is like, okay, that's good. Okay. I could see if he was knocked out after the match, I would have been like, no, that's bad. You know what I mean? But him getting back up after that match shows that, yeah, this feud is not over.
No, it is not. And moving on to our next match for the Crown Jewel Women's Championship, we had Women's World Champion Liv Morgan against WWE Women's Champion Nia Jax. And a heel versus heel match.
Yeah, pretty good match. We knew that there's going to be a lot of interferences in this match.
Oh, yes, there was. Including Tiffany Stratton pretending to cash in the Money in the Bank, but she ended up not doing it again.
Right. Because Raquel Rodriguez interfered.
And also Nia Jax caught her before she did too.
Yeah.
But then ultimately, Dominic threw the Money in the Bank briefcase into the ring to distract the referee. And then as he did that, Nia Jax got kicked in the head by Raquel Rodriguez as she was attempting the bonsai, and that would allow Liv Morgan to hit the Oblivion to win the match and become the first ever Women's Crown Jewel Champion.
Dude, looking at that belt, I'm just how huge that belt is. Just, it's like, you know, big as my arm. It's like this is how big it is. You know what I mean? Like, damn, it's a huge belt. It's a good thing they're not taking it with them, though, because as Triple H said, the belt is staying in Saudi Arabia, though, but they will be getting a custom-made ring for it.
Yes, Liv Morgan did receive a ring later in the night, and Liv Morgan actually looked very emotional after winning the match. You could, like, tell it on her face, and also from how she was speaking afterwards when she was talking about it. Yeah, you could definitely tell it meant a lot to her. Yeah, she came from, you know, humble beginnings, bro. I remember watching one of her documentaries. She came from Jersey also, and like her family was kind of poor to the point, like when she first started making money in WWE, the first thing she did was take her mother on a vacation because her mother could never afford to go on one.
I want to ask you this. I mean, so far, I mean, because we're all pretty much almost at the end of the year, so far who do you think has been the best women's wrestler this year?
Shit, it's kind of hard because like they've been going like intertwined, but I guess the most consistent would probably be Liv Morgan, honestly, especially for the second half.
I agree.
So, yes, Liv Morgan ended up winning the Women's Crown Jewel Championship. I figured it was going to go in that direction. Nia Jax already won the King of the Ring at the last Saudi show and the women's title. So I figured Liv was probably going to get this little notch under her belt. And, yo, I'm not mad at it.
No, not at all. And, you know, with her still feuding with Rhea Ripley. Now, speaking of Rhea Ripley, it was said that originally it was planned, they were supposed to have Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Rodriguez that night, but it got canceled because prior to Crown Jewel, Rhea Ripley got hurt, is pretty much sidelined for indefinitely, quite a bit of while. It's a, yeah.
Yeah, she suffered a
kind of sad thing to hear, man.
She suffered a fractured orbital bone. They did an angle on NXT last week where Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez were like walking away with like a pipe, and it showed Rhea Ripley like lying down on the floor, and she was bloodied up and all beaten up. But in reality, she actually got hurt the week before during a headbutt spot.
Yeah.
With Liv Morgan on Raw. So yeah, she's going to be out for the foreseeable future, but this might be a way for them to be able to stretch this out until WrestleMania.
Now I'm okay with that because they're asking about how should they stretch it out to Mania. And I said that's way too long. If Rhea Ripley was not hurt, if she was still hurt, then don't extend it. But now since she's hurt, and a possibility she could be back before Mania, then okay, hey, I can see this now. Works out fine.
Yeah, I don't know how long she's going to be gone for. They didn't say exactly how long, but if she's gone for like another 2 or 3 months or so, then yeah, they could definitely stretch this to WrestleMania. I mean,
yeah, they can.
It was starting to get stale on TV the last few weeks, so now that they're going to be able to get away from it, at least for now, that will give them more of a reason to maybe do it at WrestleMania, which I don't mind. I mean, I feel bad that Rhea Ripley got hurt. Obviously, I hate to see anybody get hurt in any way, but if they can make something good out of this in the future, then nothing wrong with that.
Hey, things happen for a reason. So, I mean, like I said, it's not something good, but like you said, this is something good, something bad it could turn into something good in the future. So we'll see what will happen going into next year.
Yes, we will. And in our next match, we had Kevin Owens going one-on-one with Randy Orton. And this match actually never got started as Randy Orton was doing his signature pose on the second rope. And as he was doing that, Kevin Owens attacked him in the knee from behind with a chair. So then the two ended up brawling, ended up beating each other up. And referees came out. The referees got their ass beat. And even Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis came out. And Adam Pearce was rewarded for trying to break up the fight with an RKO.
Right, and Orton wasn't having it, man. Orton was losing it.
This is after Orton drink after that,
right? This is after Orton had hit KO Kevin Owens with a steel chair a couple of times, and Orton was not having it. They went back outside the ring. Orton even suplexed. He back suplexed Kevin Owens onto the announce table, and just pretty much all hell broke loose. Pretty much throughout the whole match, or match never even started.
They end up brawling into the crowd, and then Kevin Owens ends up putting Randy Orton on a table, and then he climbs up to this like little railing, and then elbow drops Randy Orton through the table. And it looked like Kevin Owens was also hurt from that too.
Yeah, they both were. And something that a storyline that is going to continue to stretch. And it's not over between these two.
Yeah, but the only thing I would say is from the way they did this, I kind of expected Kevin Owens to like beat the hell out of Randy Orton a lot harder than he did. I thought he was going to powerbomb him on the apron like he did so many other people and things along those lines. But for him to do the elbow drop to the table and then them just like go away from it, it was still good, but it kind of felt like with how they've been building Kevin Owens up recently that he was going to do more damage than he did.
Maybe he will lead it on, moving forward though, but I mean,
yeah, this thing is far from over. I'm not sure what they're going to be doing at Survivor Series, whether they'll do another rematch between the two, or if Owens is going to be going after Cody, but I guess we'll find out Friday on SmackDown where they're going to be going now.
Yeah.
And in the best match of the night up until this point, we had a triple threat match for the United States title featuring LA Knight, Andrade, and Carmelo Hayes.
This is a good match. Finally, we get to see LA Knight defend his U.S. title on a PLE event on the card. And yeah, this is a pretty decent match.
Yeah, it was fun. All three guys worked well off of each other. There were a lot of folks near falls. There was like one little mistake that LA Knight made at one point that people were like kind of like talking about afterwards. But whatever, mistakes are going to happen in a match. But ultimately, to no surprise, LA Knight ended up retaining by hitting a blunt force trauma onto Carmelo Hayes and retaining the title. Great match. I hope they do a rematch on Friday on SmackDown, too. That's how much I liked it.
I'm down for it. So down for it. I said, I think it's good to see LA Knight, make that title useful, defend it. And it was good for him to, put that title on the line. Also, this is good for Andrade and Carmelo Hayes as well. So,
yeah, hopefully they stay in that mix. Hopefully this is like one of many matches they all have together in the next few months, because yeah, this was some good stuff. It was nice to see the United States title like defended in a match that was like that high quality. It's kind of been a while.
You're right. If this continues, LA Knight could potentially be on that mantle of, one of the all-time great U.S. champions.
The best one in WWE, I would say, is John Cena. The best one from overall that people say is probably Lex Luger. Yeah, Lex Luger in the late 80s in WCW, everybody always raves about how good he was as U.S. champion.
Okay.
But moving on to the main event, for For the Crown Jewel Men's Championship, we had WWE Champion Cody Rhodes against World Heavyweight Champion The Ring General, Gunther.
Yes.
I'm telling you, bro, that dude has to come out with a TikTok dance called The Ring General with like him and Ludwig Kaiser like doing this little cool dance and shit, in the suits and all that. Yo, I'm telling you, bro, blow up instantly.
Luke Kaiser would be the one who mainly be dancing. Gunther would probably be that one, be like, stop dancing, just walk into the ring, please. That type of person.
You never know, bro. Maybe Gunther had some moves. You never know.
At his wedding. But anyway, this is the first time they actually had an actual one-on-one match, but also like last time they had an encounter was from Royal Rumble back in 2023. Surprised it's been that long though, but yeah, it was very great to see these two get out in the ring again. And this was actually a pretty decent match. I love the finish, actually.
Yes, it made perfect sense. They could have done an outside interference angle with like maybe Goldberg or Kevin Owens.
That was
how they did this.
Yeah, which I kind of like predicted. I kind of like, okay, with what happened at Bad Blood, I kind of wanted to see, all right, Goldberg, you know, interferes and costs Gunther the match. But, hey, it didn't happen. It's whatever. It's all good. But how the way this match ended, I love the finish.
Yes, as Cody was going for a springboard diamond cutter, Gunther caught him into the sleeper. But as Gunther had him trapped in the sleeper, Cody reversed it into a pin, and he actually got the win. Shades of Bret Hart and Roddy Piper at WrestleMania 8.
It's what Cody did. He did it from the top row. He usually does it from, like, the top row from the turnbuckle. And then Gunther countered it. I was, oh my God, I love how he countered that. And then he countered it into, you know, to a pin like that. I loved that and came out of nowhere.
Yes, he did. And that allowed Cody to win, become the first ever male Crown Jewel champion. And yeah, they had a great match. This was definitely the best match on the show. I feel like the show overall got better towards the end. Like these last two matches really delivered, especially the main event. And I like the fact that Gunther actually shook Cody's hand afterwards.
I was surprised to see that. But I was surprised that, yeah.
Yeah, so like I said, decent show overall. Not a classic, I would call it, by any stretch. But it delivered in the places where it needed to and it furthered along the stories that we're going to need to watch going into Survivor Series. So in that sense, it accomplished what it needed. On a scale from 1 to 10, I say I would give it about maybe a 7. Yeah, maybe 7. Give or take.
7.5, 7.5.
Yeah, I would say like kind of similar to Bad Blood. Like it had its moments, but a lot of the other stuff kind of wasn't really anything memorable.
Yeah, I felt like when you watch this event, and I said this last week, this is one of those events where you want to watch out for the stuff that's happening after the match that's going to lead into later on. Like, you know, for example, talking about the six-way tag match between the Bloodline, you know, Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. And also with I don't want to say Cody Rhodes and Gunther because nothing really was going to happen, though. But it's mainly those two things that I mentioned previously. Those are the things you want to be looking out for to moving forward, especially as you're going into Survivor Series.
Definitely, and Cody is the Crown Jewel Men's Champion. Him and Liv Morgan both received their rings. Their rings look really dope and all. And we won't be seeing either of those titles again until next year.
Mm-hmm. Those belts are just... shit. I mean, it was whatever, though, but those belts are just too huge. Jesus.
I thought the World Heavyweight title was huge, but holy shit.
Oh, my God.
I remember how the World Heavyweight title looked around Rey Mysterio's waist back when he won it. Imagine like trying to put that belt around his waist.
Yeah, it would cover him completely.
Holy shit,
man. Right. Man.
But yes, that was Crown Jewel for 2024. Like I said, it had its moments. It was cool for what it was. But we had Raw taking place on Monday night, which was last night actually. And the show started with a segment with Liv Morgan coming out to gloat about her win at Crown Jewel. And she was interrupted by the women's tag team champions of Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill.
Pretty much stating her case, they want to shout out the title, huh?
Well, what mainly happened from this segment was Liv Morgan kind of starting to plant the first seeds between a split between Bianca and Jade, where she basically said, the only reason why you two are still together is because you have those tag team titles.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Yeah, and she was like talking about how like Bianca calls herself like the EST, the best at this, the best at that, and your partner's the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Liv, Raquel, Bianca, and Jay, they were all going at it until eventually Adam Pearce came out to try to split it up and interrupted. And then as it got like even more chaotic and more crazy, Adam Pearce announced there would be a battle royal to decide the number one contender for Liv's women's world title, and that would be taking place right away.
Mm.
As Bianca and Jade were two of the final four in the ring, they looked at each other face to face as if they were going to go at it. But then, just like in the Royal Rumble, they were interrupted, but this time by Lyra Valkyra and Io Sky. And as they were attempting an elimination, Raquel Rodriguez grabbed Bianca's braid, and then Jade Cargo tried to keep her in the ring from being eliminated. But then Liv Morgan came onto the apron and pulled both Jade and Bianca out of the ring to get them both eliminated. Motherfucker.
Crazy. I did not expect that. I thought, was that the right move to do that? I think either...
I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it.
You sure, though? Because, like, look, I mean, after what we saw, right? Because you see Liv Morgan planting the seeds of a potential split between Bianca and Jade Cargill. You kind of wanted to see one of them to win that match and then possibly... You know, they're eventually going to have a match with Liv Morgan, and then one of them is going to cost that person that match. That would have, like, lead to another dissension between them. You know what I mean? So I would have loved to see that. Well, I thought Io Sky winning that battle royal would have, it was kind of, you know, a little bit of a weird thing. I don't know.
Well, I don't mind Io Sky winning because now she's a babyface. She's fucking great, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Always. Oh, always. There's no doubt about that. Oh, there's no doubt about that at all. I'm never doubting that at all. I'm going by what I'm seeing in the story, you know, what was transitioning before all that. You know what I mean? I thought that maybe that would have been like a perfect way. For example, you have Bianca Belair to win, right? And then Bianca has a match with Liv Morgan and Jade comes in and she's trying to help, but it costs Bianca Belair the match. And then now we're starting to see a little bit of turmoil between the two now because of what happened earlier. So I thought that would have been a great thing to do, but hey, that's just me.
Yeah, that's one way they could have gone about it, but look from the way it looked like after this, especially considering that Bianca and Jade chased them away afterwards, it's looking like Bianca and Jade are going to face Liv and Raquel for the tag titles. I don't know if it's going to be a Survivor Series or Saturday night's main event, but they're going to have that match. I think Liv and Raquel are going to win because of a miscommunication between Bianca and Jade, yeah. And that's where the further escalation of their split up is going to start to happen.
Most likely, they, you know, I think for a match like that, I think it's most likely maybe for a Saturday night's main event.
It could be, and then they could do Liv and Io Sky at Survivor Series.
Yeah.
That'll be a fun match. I mean, like I said, since Rhea's going to be out for a few months, they need to do other things to occupy Liv Morgan's time until she gets
back. Of course. Oh, yeah, of course.
There's two things that'll occupy her time. Women's title feud and also a tag team title feud.
Down for it.
Let's do it. And we also had a segment between Jimmy and Jey Uso and Sami Zayn, in which, like, Jimmy Uso was getting pissed off at Sami Zayn for what happened at Crown Jewel, talking to him about how the fact that he's not family and how he screwed everything up. And then Sami Zayn, like, went on to remind Jimmy Uso of all of his screw-ups and all the times that he turned on people and all the times that he couldn't be trusted, and he's trying to question Sami Zayn's trust. And then Sami Zayn just got to the point where he said, you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not dealing with this anymore. I'm out. Jay, you're on your own. I only came out there at Crown Jewel to help you out, but I'm not going to deal with this other drama. And then Jay kind of stopped him as he was halfway up the ramp, and he like asked him if he would be willing to come to SmackDown on Friday to meet with Roman Reigns. So looks like that's going to be the main segment on SmackDown that we see, and that's going to lead to all kissing and making up and going against Dollar Tree Bloodline at War Games.
I told you. This is all getting interesting, man. It's all part of the plan. So we'll see what's going to happen after that. I'm looking forward to that.
Also, we had the further development of the New Day issues as like Xavier was like blaming Kofi for their loss in the Triple Threat number one contenders match the week before, when it was actually Xavier the one who messed up as he like didn't do the finisher and tried to attack Rey Mysterio instead. And then ultimately Xavier tried to tag himself into the match when Kofi had it won. Then he ended up screwing up, and then that cost him the match again. So, yeah, this split is, like, really starting to further escalate, and it's funny. The end of this month is going to be the New Day's 10-year anniversary.
They're going to celebrate that next week, by the way.
No, I don't think it's going to be next week. It's going to be sometime this month. I heard Adam Pearce say that it's going to happen on Raw.
I thought it was next week. Month,
but no, it's not going to be next week.
Okay. I thought I heard it was like next week or something. But all I know is whenever that happens, that's when the split up is going to happen.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I can see Big E also being involved in some way too. Xavier maybe beat up over him or something. But yeah, this is inevitable. But I like this. I've liked how they've stretched this out the last few months. Yeah, I can imagine Xavier like in a black leather jacket and like black pants, and he throws like Kofi through a window. And then Corey Graves says, "Why did Kofi feel like he had to jump out the window for?"
And is it going to be like a combination of that and the Festival of Friends segment?
Possibly. I remember when New Day first debuted, like at the end of 2014, and their original presentation got shitted on by everyone.
I hated it too. I was like, what the hell is this? But then after a while, it rubbed off and we started to like it. And just, hey, it was all smooth sailing after that.
Yeah, I felt like some shit out of a Tyler Perry movie.
I'm surprised they went this long, though. I mean, it was something that didn't work out. I'm surprised it actually worked out at first, but that's crazy.
Yeah, I was at WrestleMania 31. When they came out, they got booed out of the stadium. And they even said themselves that was the day that they knew that it wasn't working and they needed to change it ASAP.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, but they've been a great success story. And I told you, New Day was pretty much in many ways the catalyst for a lot of the success we've been seeing a lot of black wrestlers having like in the last decade.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like seeing how popular they became, they definitely opened the doors for a lot more people that we're seeing have success now.
Yeah.
And also, we had a great match between Dragon Lee and Chad Gable. And as great as the match was, as much as I liked it, unfortunately, Chad Gable lost again.
Ooh, he's been on a losing streak, hasn't he?
Yeah, I feel bad, man, because first, he didn't get that match at WrestleMania with Gunther. Then they turn him heel and he feuds with Sami Zayn. You're like, okay, he'll get the title in this feud, but he'll be a heel. Then he doesn't win the title in that feud. Then they put him in that feud with the Wyatt Six where he gets laid out every week and they end up losing that feud. And I know he's feuding with Rey Mysterio now, which is great, but he just lost again to Dragon Lee. I mean, it was a great match. Don't get me wrong. The match was dope, but yo, how many times is this dude going to lose?
This is reminding me of Christian back in 2002. Just a losing streak and just like kind of like on a downhill spiral, man. Like, again, you mentioning about that stuff, what happened to him earlier this year, it's heartbreaking, man, especially when he lost against Sami Zayn when I really picked him to win that match. I was very disappointed about that. But, yeah, this is a head scratcher, man. I don't know, like, man, we really – look, we see potential in Chad Gable, but it's like, dude, losing again? What is up?
I don't know, man. I really don't know. Like, I like this whole American-made stable that he has with the Creed brothers and Ivy Nile. It's great. Yeah. And I'm sure he'll probably beat Rey Mysterio in their feud. But, yeah, just seeing him lose so much, it's like, yo, what is going on with this dude? I remember his contract was up earlier this year. Then he ended up re-signing. And it feels like ever since he's signed, it's been...
This was, like, during the summer, though, yeah?
Yeah, it was during the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I don't know what to make of it, but we'll see what happens in the next few weeks. The Duke can still throw down in the ring, though, regardless of any of that.
Hell yeah. Can still throw down. Oh, of course. Oh, hell yeah. That's why I wanted him to win the IC title earlier this year. Has the potential.
Maybe it'll happen eventually, but I feel like this is one example of like one of the people that maybe Triple H hasn't done the best by. Or like one of Triple H's fumbles, if you want to put it that way. We'll get into like another one of those in a few minutes from an
AEW. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's definitely one I want to talk about. Something that should have happened, that needs to happen, maybe going into next year.
Okay. All right. But in the main event of Raw, we had a four-way to decide the number one contender for Gunther's World Heavyweight title between Damian Priest, Sheamus, Seth Rollins, and Dominic Mysterio.
And prior to this, when he announced this right after Crown Jewel, I picked Damian Priest to win this match.
I picked Dominic.
You lie. Liar. For real?
Hey, there was one point in the match when Bronson Reed came out and beat everybody up, including Seth Rollins. There was one point where Dominic hit Sheamus with a frog splash. I'm like, oh no, he's not going to win, is he? I sincerely thought he was going to win at that point.
No, nice try though. But Damian Priest is the right man to win this match, because this so far continues the feud between him and Gunther.
Yes, Damian Priest ultimately wanted to end by hitting Dominic with a South of Heaven. Your Dominic gets crazy hype with that move, bro.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so Damian Priest won the match. He's the new number one contender for the world title. Him and Gunther had a stare down after the match is over as the show went off the air. But the thing is, we don't know if this match is happening at Survivor Series or if they're going to wait till Saturday night's main event.
I think he should have this for Survivor Series. I would like to see that.
I would too. I don't know when we're going to be seeing Punk again. I was hearing that it would maybe be Punk and going through a Survivor Series, but I don't think that's happening.
No. And as far as, speaking of that, that Hell in a Cell, CM Punk's opponent, Drew McIntyre, is taking some time off. He's in Europe right now, back at home, because he's dealing with, because he lost his brother. So, so he's taking some much needed time off. So, which is good for him.
Oh shit. I didn't even know he lost his brother. I heard he was like dealing with some family personal issues, but I didn't realize that happened. Oh man.
I remember prior to Bad Blood, there was a family member who passed away.
I didn't realize it was his brother. Oh shit.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know if it was his brother or not, but I do remember hearing that a family member passed away. This was prior to Bad Blood. So after that, yeah, he took some time off, which was, can't blame him, but yeah, take some time off, heal up and take some time with your family.
Yeah, definitely. That, and also considering how brutal that match was, both of them needed to take a break.
Yeah, they do. One thing we forgot to mention about that Raw was still in Saudi Arabia that night. So this marks the first Monday Night Raw in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, it was a good vibe. The crowd was pretty energetic. They were a lot better than the crowd was last week in Hershey. Way better.
Dude, can we just agree that all crowds internationally are better than the crowds here in America?
Much better. They're going on their international European tour before WrestleMania next year. They're going to be in London. They're going to be in Belgium. They're going to be everywhere. Yeah, they're going to be in Spain. That. Yeah, all going into WrestleMania. They're going to have Raws and SmackDowns in there too.
I heard about that. I think them making that decision to stay in the same place after Crown Jewel, that was the right decision to do. Better traveling, that's better timing, just to stay there for another day and then, go back to the States when it's all finished.
Much lighter travel schedule, better for the talent, better for everybody. Nice. Yeah, I supported 100%, and the crowd was great too.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of a potential Gunther opponent, Goldberg announced the other day that he will be having a retirement match in WWE sometime in 2025.
Yep, just like John Cena for next year.
Well, John Cena is having a retirement tour, but Goldberg's
on a tour. Yeah, tour, but yeah, but we both. But regardless, so next year, this is it for the both of them.
You know who Goldberg's last opponent should be?
Hold on. Gilbert.
That's not far off. I was going to say somebody else.
You want him to have Bret Hart to have a payback match against him? No, that's who.
Well, they can't do that. I was thinking Hugh Morris because that was his first opponent.
Oh, is he what is he doing right now? Isn't he one of the talent scouts, or what does he do now?
Nah, he used to be in NXT as one of the trainers, but then he ended up resigning because a lot of people were complaining about his methods, the way he would talk to the talent and all that. Yeah, he got a lot of complaints and he ended up leaving
because he
would take the tough love aspect of it too far, calling them the F word, calling them other things he probably shouldn't have been saying. Apparently the people who were training didn't take too well to that, and that's why he ended up leaving.
Okay, right.
Yeah, because if you remember him on Tough Enough 3, he was, unlike the way I thought he would be. Yeah, because like when you saw him on TV, he was like the laughing dude and the giggling dude and all that. But then when I saw him on Tough Enough 3 and he's like all hard ass and all tough on everybody, I'm like, yo, who the fuck is this guy? Yeah, he's like talking shit to them, saying, you did that shit like a girl, you're a bitch, you're a punk. I'm like, yo, why didn't they let them be this way on TV? Why didn't you play like the funny character all these years?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but I mean, I wasn't there, I don't know, but apparently that's what the main consensus was.
Wow.
What are you going to do? But anyway, so yeah, Goldberg will be having his retirement match in 2025. Dolph Ziggler had an interesting tweet about it, about describing how the match would go, saying that Goldberg would hit a spear, the person would kick out at one, then hit Goldberg with their finisher, and then that would be it.
Kind of curious who's going to be his opponent for his last match for 2025.
Only time will tell.
Yep.
More than likely, Gunther. It'll be Gunther more than likely, but we'll see when that match takes place. Maybe it'll be on the first Raw on Netflix.
Okay. I could petition for Bret Hart now. I'll petition for that.
The dude's already survived two strokes and cancer. You want him to go through another match with Goldberg?
Oh no, Bret Hart! No. Bret Hart has the anger and the tenacity to get back in that ring, get vengeance on Goldberg. I know he does now. Come on,
maybe one of his sons, but not him.
No, who? Blade, who just had a kid, by the way. Congratulations to him and his wife. I think
I'll never forget that picture of Blade when he's a baby, like wearing the little Bret Hart jacket, crying because Hulk Hogan is holding him, and Hogan has a big smile on his face.
I'll send you that picture. I've never seen that one. Yeah, I never seen that one.
Yeah, Blade was a big part of the Wrestling with Shadows documentary. Like, he was with Bret, like, on the road trips and stuff.
First time I saw him was at WrestleMania 12.
He's at Ringside. Me too, but I'm saying if you watch the Wrestling with Shadows documentary, he's in a lot of it.
Okay.
Let's get into some unfortunate news, as three people were released from WWE this past Friday, and three of those people included Baron Corbin, Tegan Knox, and Indy Hartwell, who actually appeared on SmackDown the same night as SmackDown had been taped the week before.
Out of all those three, Indy Hartwell's beating release was the most shocking one. She had potential. She was used a lot, and she was released. That surprised me out of all the three.
Yeah, she was on TV a lot, like, you know, at least recently. I mean, admittedly, since she's been on the main roster, they haven't done, like, too much with her. But as far as the three of them, like, she's been the one who's been the most relevant, at least lately.
Yeah. Like, okay, like, the other two, I have not, you know, Corbin, like, oh, my God. I don't even remember the last time I even seen him.
The last I remember seeing of him was like a few months ago when he was teaming with Apollo Crews, and he was a good guy now and all that. They sent him back down to NXT for a while. He was in NXT. He was the tag team with Bron Breakker.
Yeah.
The thing with Baron Corbin is that like they put him in too many dumb gimmicks.
Okay, here's my take on Baron Corbin. I remember when he first came in, I remember his very first gimmick.
The Lone Wolf.
Yeah, I didn't really catch on to it. You know what I mean? And they try to switch it up, right? And this is no offense to him. I felt like Baron Corbin was one of those guys where, like, I thought he would have been gone, like, a while ago. You know what I mean? He was there. He was there, like, for a good minute, dude. Like,
8 years. On the main roster with these.
Like, now looking back at it, I remember he was feuding with Roman Reigns, and I was just, look, don't get me wrong. The whole Rich, like the Vegas Rich thing gimmick he did for a while. That at first that was pretty creative, but that was pretty funny.
You know what was good? The bum ass Corbin storyline they had with him, where like he was like losing matches all the time.
Yeah.
And he went broke, and like he looked like he didn't shave his face in months. Yeah, like that was good. That gimmick was good. I'll give you that.
Yeah, that was prior to him getting rich, right?
Yeah, that like before he got rich, like that part of it was good.
Okay.
When they made him rich, personally, I didn't like that as much.
You know what? I can agree with you on that. I think prior to him, the bum-ass Corbin, and going and becoming rich, that whole storyline transitioning into that, that was cool. I was like, okay, this is entertaining. This is funny. He's like, oh, he won the lottery. Oh, he won the jackpot in Vegas. I was like, oh, okay, he's rich now. Okay, I thought that was all right. Oh, that's like a new, fresh look. You know what I mean? But Yeah, I mean, you really can't do anything much. And this just goes for anybody. You know what I mean? You're going to have to, you know, you're going to leave eventually. So my best wishes to him. We'll see what he'll do, you know, moving forward, though. But, man, Indy Hartwell, man. Really liked her.
Yeah, the best stuff, honestly, Indy Hartwell did was when she was, like, with Dexter Lumis in NXT. When she was in that race with Johnny Gargano, Austin Theory, and Candice LeRae. Her and, like, Dexter Lumis were kind of feeling each other. Then they ended up having a wedding and all that. That was pretty entertaining. Mm-hmm. But then when she got to the main roster, they didn't really do much with her. She was just tag-teaming with Candice LeRae. And, like, yeah, there was no real focus on them.
Mm.
And then back to Baron Corbin for a second. He was doing the lone wolf stuff, which was fine for what it was. And then he won Money in the Bank. And then he ended up not winning when he cashed it in. That was bad. That was bad.
Man. I forgot about that. What year was that?
2017. He tried to cash in on Jinder Mahal and he ended up not winning. And then that Sunday, SummerSlam, he like lost the opening match to John Cena. After that, I was like, yo, who did this dude piss off? Ooh, this does not look good.
Oh, man. Wow.
He was one of the worst Money in the Bank cash-ins they ever had. Was that? Yeah, it was that one.
Man.
And also they made him like the Constable Corbin character where he was like the on-screen authority figure on Raw. And then was that one famous segment when the McMahons all came back after like the approval and like the ratings for the show were so bad that they had to come out to try to like, you know, save face. So like in storyline purposes, they blamed all the problems with Raw on Baron Corbin.
Wasn't he one of the ones where they on SmackDown they did that one little segment where that spot where he dumped dog food on Roman Reigns?
Yeah, I was gonna get to that in a second, but before all that happened, yeah, they did that segment where they blamed all of Raw's like creative problems on him because he was an on-screen authority figure. But actually, one notch under his belt that people forget—I know I didn't want it to happen, but it was what they did that year anyway. He was the guy who retired Kurt Angle.
Oh my God, I cannot believe it. I forgot about that. And I want to forget about that because that was the wrong decision to do, for one.
Look, it was. It definitely was, but whatever, it still happened. Even Kurt Angle didn't want it that way. Kurt Angle, like, wanted to do a retirement match, like maybe John Cena, but then said, like, only if you wait till next year, I want you against Corbin this year. And then Angle said, I'm not going to make it till next year. I don't have it. And he's like, all right, then, you're going to go against Corbin.
One of the reasons why that Mania was bad.
I don't want to call it bad. There were still some good moments on it, but it definitely could have been better and shorter for that matter.
It's not a Mania. It wasn't eh.
But anyway, yes, in any event, he was the dude who retired Kurt Angle. He also won King of the Ring that year, and he feuded with Seth Rollins and Roman. And yeah, that Roman feud I'm not crazy about when they did the whole dog food segment where he like poured dog food all over him and they brought out the Roman Reigns mascot one night. Yeah, it was so trash. So fucking trash.
2019, Kurt. Oh.
That was the one year, like I said, that's the one year that made me legit want to spit in Vince McMahon's face and say, fuck you, bro.
A mascot.
Yeah, that's the one year that exemplifies how bad Vince McMahon's creative ideas got as the years went on. 2019. That was the year where you just said, like, yo, this dude has to go.
Ooh.
But that's another story. So, yeah, they had that. And then he did the bum-ass Corbin stuff and the Rich Corbin stuff. And then he was briefly managed by JBL.
Yeah. I remember that.
And then in another way of, like, shitting on him, JBL, like, had enough of managing him and said, you can't polish a turd. I tried. Damn, son.
Hey, he's speaking the truth. Damn it. Come on.
I'll say this about Corbin. He had a good moveset. He had a very good moveset. Like the end of days finisher he would do.
Yeah.
That was a good ass move.
He's not talking about the Arnold Schwarzenegger film, ladies and gentlemen.
Hell no.
That's a horrible movie, God almighty. And I can't believe WWE was trying to promote that movie because all those they had the nerve. Oh man, it's probably had to be by far one of Arnold's worst movies ever. Man, I feel bad for him. It's like once I'm sorry for switching topic, but like, man, once it was like like mid-90s going to late-90s. It's just Arnold just like,
so yeah, Corbin just got put into like one like bad gimmick after the other, one situation where he was looked to look really bad after the other. And yeah, ultimately it didn't really maybe go as well as it should have gone. But what are you going to do?
True. True. I mean, like half of his resume is kind of like somewhat like, okay, you did this, you did that. But it's just like most of it was just like, you know.
Yeah, like I said, like that segment on Raw where the McMahons like blamed all the creative problems on him, then failing to cash in the Money in the Bank, and then the JBL line where he said, like, you can't polish a turd. Yeah, there were certain situations they put him in where, like, yo, there's like no real coming back from this. But Tegan Nox, I feel really bad for because she was just injury prone. That was the biggest thing with her. Like, she was always getting hurt.
Oh, I see.
She had 3 torn ACLs within the period of only 4 years.
3? Wow.
Yeah, she got injured a lot. She would come back from an injury, she'd be back, everything would be rolling, and she would get hurt again.
Man.
Yeah, it's sad. It's like not her fault. Like, you know, things happen that were beyond her control. But from the company standpoint, if the person, like, you know, can't wrestle and can't work, what can they really do with them?
Well, I mean, it was just like in sports. I mean, when you have a player that's constantly getting hurt, you know, injury prone, as the, you know, general manager or the owner, you have to make a tough decision. You know, you can't keep your player and you're pretty much like you're spending money on this player that's wasted money for your salary cap. So you have to release them. So it's kind of similar to in this situation with wrestling. So you have injury prone wrestler and it's like, what more can you do with this person?
Yeah. Unless they can find like another use of her, like maybe being an on-screen reporter or an announcer or something, a manager, but whatever, it just didn't go that way. Sad. Yeah. And apparently there's more releases to come within the next few weeks. And supposedly a person who's at the top of that list getting released is Nakamura.
Oh, no. Say it ain't so.
It's just hearsay. There's no like...
I know, but just the thought of it though, man. I like, look, his feud. I love his feud. If it is true, I always love that guy. Loved his theme song. I loved, you know, he feuded with Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes recently. Loved it. I love how he was pushed into the title picture.
I saw him wrestle Cody Rhodes at that SmackDown I went to at the State Farm Arena earlier this year. It was the dark match after the show.
Yeah. He came in 2017, right?
No, he came into NXT like in 2016. And he was there for a year. He was doing great. I remember his debut in WrestleMania 32 weekend against Sami Zayn. Yo, it was nuts, bro. It was nuts. That was considered one of the best matches that year. Yeah, the theme song, his entrance, that match he had with Sami Zayn, which ended up being Sami Zayn's swan song in NXT. Yo, that shit was incredible, bro. He moved to the main roster. Then they had him like lose 2 matches to Jinder Mahal. And then he eventually won the Royal Rumble, which was great. And then he had that match with AJ at WrestleMania. That was kind of a disappointment. Then he turned him heel after that, and he ended up losing that feud. And then, yeah, just from that point on, it just was never really on the same level again for him.
No, it wasn't, though. And there was a couple times there was like a little bit up and, you know, up and down where we'll push him, you know, one moment. And then he kind of like went down after that and we'll push him again. But, yeah, I felt like that. Like that 2017, kind of like 2018 run was like his best, it, well, including NXT though. But I wanted to ask you this though. Do you think that his match against AJ Styles back at WrestleMania 34, do you think Shinsuke should have won that match?
In a way, yes. In a way. I just feel like him losing, and when they turned him heel after that, I said, okay, maybe they'll put the title on him at the next show or the show after and they'll go from there. But then when he didn't get the title,
he never did.
In hindsight, it was like, yo, this didn't work. Him and Asuka had so much momentum winning the Royal Rumbles that year, and they both went to WrestleMania and lost. Now I see why you hate that WrestleMania so much.
No. I didn't say I hate it. I said to myself that Mania was one of those Manias where it could have been better. It could have been great. Yeah, it was those Manias where I said if they would have did a 2-night format like they do now, it could have potentially been a good Mania. But the fact that it was way too long, and the fact that some of the stuff that they, the decisions that they did do was kind of like, you kind of, you know, scratch your head a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it could have definitely
been. I said it's that show where, okay, it started off great. I said, oh, you're watching a show and like, oh, this potentially is going to be good, definitely better than last year. But as the show went on, kind of like towards the, like, kind of like late in the middle, towards the end, it kind of just, it got a little lackluster after that.
That WrestleMania, after that mixed tab, it fell off harder than the Lakers after that 2011 sweep they had against Dallas.
Probably is not as bad as the Knicks choking in the 94 finals.
All right, but anyway, yeah, we talked about this enough. But Montez Ford was recently opening up about his frustrations with his position in WWE, and this is what Montez had to say. We got a WrestleMania win, and then boom, it just stops. And it's been this constant stop and go and stop and go with the Street Profits, where we'll get momentum, and then the momentum will stop. Then the momentum will start again, and the momentum will stop. For us, it's frustrating because it's hard to get behind a team whose momentum starts, and then it shifts again.
First of all, let's get one thing straight. Two things. The reason why their momentum, and this is not like to throw dirt on them or anything like that. I love both of them. I always have, right? The reason why their momentum is going up and down because they're not, there's nothing creative going on with them. It's been the same thing all over again. Two things. They're not a heel tag team like they should have been earlier. They always been a babyface tag team for one thing. I thought they're going to be heel when they were with Bobby Lashley. I thought, okay, this is going to be great, but they didn't. That was momentum that they had that could have potentially would have worked out in their favor, but I'm not blaming that on them. I'm kind of like blaming that on the writers. They could have turned them heel. Number two, and I've been saying this for a while, and Montez kind of like went against this, is that they need to split up. They need to split up. Like, if you want to see potential, I know they're talking about them as a tag team having momentum, though, but like, eventually they got to split up and see where their boundaries are at and where their full potential is at as single competitors. Because look, at this rate, they're not going anywhere unless they turn them heel. If they stay a babyface, like, look, what they're going to feud, what, like, current tag team champions right now is the Motor Machine Guns, right?
Motor City Machine Guns, yes.
Motor City Machine Guns. So what, you're going to what, just, oh, let's put a babyface tag team and babyface tag team. Like, no, if you turn them heel, then, hey, we got a potential feud on our hands. But they're not going to do that.
Yeah, and even Montez was talking about that. Even Montez was also talking about the fact that they're bringing in new teams, and that's kind of making people forget about, like, you know, what the Street Profits have been doing the last few years, and it kind of feels like they're an afterthought. So I would say they either need to do something with them, like put them in a real, like, compelling feud, compelling storyline, or whatever it is, or they need to split up, one or the other. Because it can't continue the way it's going right now. They can't.
You can't do anything when you're a babyface. Because if you're a babyface, then you would have been, you know, in the title hunt picture or anything like that. But you're not. And look, I'm not putting this the blame on them. I'm kind of like looking at the creative. You see something's not working. You're not really using these people. So it's like, what are you going to do with them? You know what I mean?
I'll even go further back than from when they were going to join Lashley last year. I remember two SummerSlams ago when they went against the Usos for the tag titles and they lost. And then afterwards, like, Montez Ford was, like, visibly pissed off at the loss. And for, like, a week or two, they were showing signs of him, like, starting to change his demeanor and change, like, his behavior. And then they never went anywhere else with it.
No, it's like...
And then, obviously, the Elimination Chamber match he was in where he had that great performance. And then after that, they did nothing with him afterwards either. So, yeah, I see where he's coming from. It's a lot... It feels like... They're like building momentum. They're going somewhere, and then just nothing comes from it.
Look, and like I said, this is not nothing against him. I think you put this on writers because it's like you're kind of blind a little bit, and you're like, look, you see something, and it's like you're not running with it. You're kind of like, oh, okay, and then like whatever. Like you said, when we saw him compete in that Elimination Chamber match, I automatically was like, okay, a month or two from now, this dude's going to jump off. But they didn't do anything. You know, so like I said, like you said earlier, you either you turn them heel, right, or you split them up. So the writers, they have to deal their cards, and I don't know what they're going to do, but they need to make a decision fast.
Yeah, because they're both talented, but Montez Ford especially, he's too talented to be just wasting away doing nothing and like doing nothing.
Thank you.
You know, that's interesting or anything that, you know, people are going to be like invested into.
I mean, for goodness sakes, look at, you know, Bobby Lashley. You know, Bobby Lashley is now on AEW and he's with MVP and Shelton Benjamin.
Let's get into that. Last Wednesday on Dynamite, it was Swerve Strickland against Shelton Benjamin, and Swerve Strickland ended up winning the match. But then afterwards, MVP was seen outside the ring making a phone call, and then the lights went out briefly, and coming out to confront Swerve Strickland was Bobby Lashley.
Wow.
Who came out, had a face-to-face stare down with Swerve Strickland, and that led to MVP, Benjamin, and Bobby Lashley triple teaming him, and then Bobby Lashley laid him out with the Hurt Lock, and now they will be known as the Hurt Syndicate.
Do you like that name?
It's fine. I guess we'll see what they have to say tomorrow night on Dynamite, because they're supposed to have a segment where they discuss everything, but I guess it's cool for what it is.
Okay. But, hey, I didn't expect this, though. They're back together again. Wow.
Yeah, Bobby Lashley was another one who kind of like got pushed to the wayside in a way when Triple H took over. He's even said himself that like him and Triple H were never really that cool. Like he was cool with Vince, but then when Triple H took over, he could like tell that he wasn't really a priority. With one example being like when he was left off the WrestleMania card last year.
Yeah, wow.
And then they put him and the Street Profits together. They looked like they were going to be a heel stable, but then like right afterwards, they turned to babyface again. They had that match at WrestleMania, which is cool, where they won. But then after Bobby Lashley left, and then ever since then, the Street Profits haven't done much. And also now Lashley's gone too. But now in AEW.
I don't know, man. Like, would you be surprised if they get released?
The Street Profits? I don't think so. I don't think they'll get released.
I mean, you're not really doing much with them. And like I said, like, look, you got a decision to make. Either you turn them heel or you split them up. I've been saying that for months.
Yeah, I get it. But I don't see it going to the point where they get released. I don't think it's going to go that far.
I mean, what else are you going to do with them?
We'll see, bro, with this interview, with him voicing his frustrations, maybe it's going to lead to something.
Let's hope. Let's hope.
Or maybe he's just pissed off to the point where he doesn't care anymore.
Kurt, stuff like that leads you not to care. It's like when you're – stuff like that.
Yeah.
In any job, if you're not just – if things are not going your way and you feel like you're not – your potential's not being used enough, it's going to lead you to be careless. So – That's frustration. So, yeah.
Yeah, but we'll see what happens with the Street Profits. It's crazy. The whole Hurt business is now in AEW. And Lashley even said he tried to, like, pitch the Hurt business getting back together, like, you know, after Vince left, but they didn't want to do it.
Oh, yeah, that was a – you know, the fact – no. Look, we could say how, like, you know, Triple H isn't, you know, not doing this, not doing that. You got to remember, Vince was the one who broke them up in the first place. Early, way too damn early. Yeah, let's not forget that.
Literally right after Lashley won the title, they split them all up. And they were like peaking at that time. They were like really building a lot of momentum.
Hell yeah. I love that stable. Loved it. And they break them up. Like, how long were they together?
6 months, give or take.
Man.
Yeah, but it is what it is. We'll see what they do in AEW. Last week's Dynamite was one of their better shows. I will admit, I did enjoy it for the most part. It looks like Orange Cassidy is going to be the next challenger for Jon Moxley's AEW title. So we'll see where they go with that. And Private Party finally won the tag team titles after being in the company since the beginning. They finally got the recognition that they've been longing for. They beat the Young Bucks for the belts.
Oh.
Yeah, so last week's Dynamite was cool. Hopefully they can build that momentum in the next few weeks, but only time will tell. And so, props to Jey Uso, as for the entire month of October, he outsold Roman Reigns and CM Punk combined in merchandise sales.
I saw that. I was like, well, I'll be damned. That was a shocker. At one point, CM Punk had like a lot of merchandise sales earlier this year. I remember that. But now Jey Uso has taken a top spot. Good for him. Good for him.
I think he's, like I said, I think he's one of the five hottest acts in the company besides Roman, Cody, CM Punk, and also Rhea Ripley.
Yeah, merchandise sales is very important, Kurt, because like when you're selling a lot, if your sales is going really high in merchandise sales, that says a lot about you. That says a lot about your character.
The glasses, the Yeet shirts, the pink he's now rocking. Yeah, I'm telling you, he's reminding me more and more of Bret Hart, but it's working, son.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, even at Crown Jewel, he got his own entrance. Like, he got his own entrance separate from Roman and Jimmy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, bro, this dude's doing big things, and I love to see it, man. Yeah, I never thought that Jey Uso would be, like, a successful solo act, but I'm glad to see it, bro. I'm really glad to see it.
I mean, this is kind of, like, no different from the Hardy Boys. I mean, I knew from the beginning when I saw the Hardy Boys together, I just already saw, like, the potential in Jeff. Like, I knew Jeff would have been the better singles competitor than Matt. No offense to Matt Hardy. I'm not trying to downplay Matt, though, but I already knew. I saw Jeff. I was like, yeah, Jeff is the guy.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people say. Like, Jey Uso kind of reminds you in many ways of Jeff Hardy.
Yeah.
As far as, like, being in a, like, a popular tag team of two brothers, but one kind of shines in a way that the other brother in a way doesn't shine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we have election night tonight, which we won't get too deeply into. We have Survivor Series coming up in a few weeks, as well as Saturday night's main event. And yeah, a lot of crazy ass stuff in wrestling for us to break you guys down off, and we will still continue to do so. We ain't going nowhere.
So by the time this podcast, this episode is released, ladies and gentlemen, and you can check us out on Spotify, YouTube, and Speaker. Yeah, we already will have a new president.
So. I think Kamala Harris might have messed up by having J-Lo come and speak for her at a rally a few days ago, because we all know J-Lo's reputation these days.
Oh, Lord. Look, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, she has Beyonce speaking for her, Kelly Rowland speaking for her, all the Eminem freaking spoke for her at a rally a few weeks ago. Yeah, all these celebrities getting involved now. Like, now it's starting to feel like more like a circus than ever.
I've never seen stuff like that in an election.
Yeah, and like I said, I will never tell anybody like not to vote. I'll never speak out against, like, you know, I mean, whoever you support or don't support, that's your own business. But I will maintain, and I will never back down from this. This whole thing, this whole way they've portrayed it over the last few years, it is a fucking clown show and it is a fucking joke, and I stand by that. You will never convince me otherwise.
Yeah. Well, like I said, by the time this episode is released, we already know who will be the president of our country, of the United States. And you can check out this episode and many other episodes, again, on YouTube, Speaker, and Spotify. Follow us on our Twitter and our Instagram page. Follow us on Twitter at The Champs Clash, and follow us on Instagram at champs.clash.
Yes, and until next time, for John Randall, this is Conscious Kurt with another edition of The Clash of the Champions. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your week. Don't make enemies out of people that you don't even know, over people that don't even give a damn about you, because that shit is not worth it. And also, most importantly of all, don't be an asshole in real life or social media, because that toxic bullshit is for the birds.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Take care, God bless, and always be cool.